Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome again here in Circles of Change. Our final segment's always a pleasure to have an in-studio guest, Tom Cope from the Utah Law. How are you today, Tom?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's good. Let me introduce Tom. He's been practicing employment law for 40 years with firms in San Francisco, New York City, Lincoln, Nebraska, and now in Tucson as a partner at Utah Law Firm. Founded in 1952, Utah Law is one of the oldest and largest law firms in Southern Arizona, offers a full range of legal services to both individuals and corporations. A graduate of Syracuse University, Tom studied law at the Nebraska College of Law, and over his career has tried over 80 jury trials to verdict, including cases before the National Labor Relations Board. Tom is also a trained and experienced mediator, successfully getting parties to settle concerns outside of court. In addition to employment law, Tom is involved in business, commercial, and insurance litigation, and he was the vice president of human resources for a company with 1,200 employees for 4 years. He's active also now in these days in the Tucson community via the YMCA, the American Cancer Society, his homeowners association, and Tom also teaches business law, the U.S. Constitution, and organizational ethics at the University of Phoenix. And one of the pleasures, of course, with me being a radio show host, he happened to hand me also a copy of a book that he published called The Executive Guide to Employment Practices, and it's already out in its third edition. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Well, we had a good, juicy topic that I'm sure is going to get our listeners' attention, particularly about career and business and organization change. You can't say those words without technology, social media, and, oh my goodness, how do we manage this new thing that's weaving into our lives?
That's exactly right. In fact, as it turns out, there are a lot of new cases coming out in the courts and the National Labor Relations Board about employees using Facebook and Twitter to trash their employer and employer policies.
Hmm.
And what we probably might talk about today would be what happens to the employee when they do that, and what are their employee rights and what are the employer's rights, because they're distinctly different.
Well, I think that's a great way to frame it up, because I'm certain there's some people on one side of the equation that say, well, wait a minute, this is the First Amendment. I can say what I will. But then there'll be others that say, but wait a minute, you're typing it on our company computer, on our technology device, and I'm sure that the complexity of this are much bigger than what I just outlined.
Well, they really are, Zara, and here's the thing. The First Amendment, which most people, you know, like to think that applies to them, mm-hmm. does not apply to private employers. So the First Amendment to the United States Constitution applies to public employees, and even then, the First Amendment can be modified by the employer to have a safe environment in the workplace.
Right.
So it's not an absolute right in the workplace. However, people really need to emphasize this in my classes, that the Constitution, all in and of itself, the Bill of Rights, does not apply to a private employer. And now what we're talking about is social media and talking to employees and employers where, I'll give you a classic example. There was a case on the National Labor Relations Board that a bartender said that he was doing waitress work, not getting tips, and posted on his private Facebook page, accessible by anybody and everybody, that this employer was the worst employer in the world, that he hoped that the drunk guests or customers would choke on glass and die.
Hmm.
And he got fired for that. And the National Labor Relations Board said, yep, that's okay to fire him for that. On the other hand, we had another one where a car employee, a car salesman, said that serving hot dogs and chips at a Lexus dealership was going to hurt his commissions. And the National Labor Relations Board said, nope, you can't fire him because he's talking about wages, hours, and working conditions.
So that's a so it's almost, it's down to topical?
It's down to topical. Every employee in this country, whether they work for a union employer or a non-union employer, are covered by the National Labor Relations Act. And that says that you may actually talk about wages, hours, and working conditions to and with your fellow employees and anybody else who will listen. And if your employer has poor policies in that regard, as long as you're speaking for a group of employees and not just on your own, that you've got a crappy supervisor and that your supervisor is the worst guy in the world or woman in the world, you're covered. And the employer cannot fire you for, you know, basically, I like to say, trashing the employer on a media site.
Well, I'd have to say, you know, again, you've been in employment law for a long time. Here we are in the last 4 to 5 years with considerably more stress and distress in the work world because of the economic conditions at hand. So are some of these cases just an accentuated situation about the economic status, or is it that plus perhaps a misunderstanding that social media isn't a private voice box, that it really is public, what you're saying?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head in two regards. First is that if you don't want it published on the front page of the USA Today,
don't type it
anywhere on your computer.
Perfect.
Or on Facebook or Twitter. That's number one, because everything you do there is public. The question becomes, if you're keeping it in the employment context, what can the employer do if the employee is absolutely bashing them and that employer's reputation? And if the employer is speaking on behalf of, employee is speaking on behalf of a group of employees about their wages, mm-hmm. or their benefits are really bad, or this employer doesn't give me health insurance and their competitors do, the employer just has to suck it up. When the employer's rights kick in is when the employee only talks about me. If it's all about me as an employee, then the employer's got something to do and something to talk about and can use corrective action up to and including termination.
The reality, though, at the end of the day, for any disgruntled employee is some way, somehow, whether you end up before the National License Board or not, it's in some way, though, going to further denigrate your situation in your company.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, who's going to promote somebody who's been trashing the company, right?
So even if it's a justified, we don't get paid enough health care, and here's a case that I'm speaking on behalf of my, you know, community of employees at this location, it's still, you ain't on the team, or there's a view that you're not.
Well, I think that's right. Now, clearly, you cannot be retaliated against by the employer, but retaliation comes in many different ways.
Right.
I'm hunching that the salesperson at this Lexus dealership in Chicago is not going to be the sales manager anytime soon. And you do, and you know, I tell my grandkids this, that whatever you post on Facebook, a prospective employer can look at that. And I see that a lot of employers now are doing that, looking on Facebook pages, and if you have been using foul language, or if you're trashing your former employer or your current one, they may not hire you.
Well, in fact, the recent statistics that I've been tracking show that 80% of all employers, before they even make the first contact back, if you've submitted your resume, they go and do a search engine check on your online presence, and so you're already there. And of that 80%, 50% of those people are completely discounted based on their social media presence. So you don't even get considered, and you will never know why.
And they always wonder why it is that they never hear back from the employer with whom they applied for a job.
And you know, let me tell you, for as you know, you advise people, I do as well, it isn't just what you've put on, but the fact that there's this friend network, that these tentacles that go out, can you really control what your friends are posting on their web that in some way can find its way back to you, whether it be their photographs, their language, their other friended groups they're part of? It all speaks a lot about you. So the nuances of this is very dicey when it comes to the employment picture.
Well, you're absolutely right. And taking it, circling back to the NLRB situation, one or two or more cases that I've read recently in the last 3 months where employees have liked the bashing of the employer, so fellow employees have liked the Facebook post, and they all got fired for liking it, the National Labor Relations Board put them all back to work. So they're protected because they're using collective action to try to either change something or, you know, trying to make their employer's conditions of employment known.
And indeed, they may be wanting altruistically to serve in an advocacy role in carrying that flag up the hill. But remember, what we do in our 30s or 40s, it's still going to be out there on the web when we're in our 50s or 60s.
Kind of like,
and don't think it can't be searched, because it will be.
Kind of like that tattoo that's on the side of your face.
Oh, yeah. You got it right. But again, in seriousness, of course, I mentioned in the introduction that you also are an instructor. And so you're teaching at the University of Phoenix. I'm certain your students really transcend all age groups, nationalities, interests, but it must make for some pretty interesting conversations with the younger generation than those who have been around or come from a different frame of reference.
Well, there's no question about that, and they're always amazed when I tell them the Constitution doesn't apply to the private workplace, because they all think they have free speech rights. And, you know, I totally applaud people that stand up for themselves, and I want people as individuals to stand up for themselves, particularly young women who can be you know, not beaten down on the job, but
truly marginalized.
But they just don't have the experience to say no when somebody asks them to do something they shouldn't be doing. So I applaud the idea of Facebook and Twitter as a social media, but again, in an employment context, it can be a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm. So there have been some recent cases that have obviously coming on the books now. It's just really a whole groundswell or a shift almost that's playing out. Any, though, that are sending, you think, cross signals at this point in time will get revisited as this technology matures and our understanding and our cultural norms shift?
Well, I agree. I think that's true. What the National Labor Relations Board did for lawyers and for employers last month, they came out with a sample policy for employers to use in a social media context. And I would recommend anybody that's listening that's an employer to get that policy from the NLRB website, which is www.nlrb.org, and see if you can find that social media policy there. Or
probably just a Google social media policy NLRB and it'll pop up.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem is that you want to make sure you get the NLRB version.
Right.
Because their big whoop is calling those things illegal. Hmm. And most of the policies that we've seen that employers have today are illegal under the NLRA. And one thing that people have in their handbooks, and I do, I don't know, 100 handbooks a year maybe, I don't know.
These are employer handbooks.
Employer handbooks.
That lays out their policies to employees.
They have a policy that says you may not discuss your wages with your fellow employees. Totally in violation of the National Labor Relations Act.
And for those of us, of course, that have been in the HR community or mentored and coach-led organizations like I have, I mean, I would have never dreamed of sharing my paycheck with anyone else. However, today it is such common practice amongst, regardless of the age group, of sharing, and let alone you could go out on any Hay study and find out what the comparable salary is, even a sister division in another part of the country. So it's all public information.
It is, but employers still insist that it's a morale issue. If you and I discuss our wages, we're doing the same job as an account executive, let's mm-hmm. say, for the truth, and you're making, you know, $5,000 or $2,000 or $1,000 more than I am a year, that could breed discontent. So they have these policies, which are, again, not legal.
Makes you take back, doesn't it?
It does.
It does. Tom, your work here in employment law over the years, you know, any major swells and changes and shifts as you think about over these 40 years, where your own personal time, I mean, obviously, you know, our country has gone through a lot of changes with outsourcing of a lot of manufacturing and unions no longer being as core to some large organizations that have in the past. How has that shifted the workload and the perspective you have now as a lawyer?
Well, the perspective is this. I mean, just as an example, back in the 70s, there was no such thing as sexual harassment. And now I give seminars, probably 4 or 5 seminars a year to employers or employer groups on sexual harassment. So that's been quite the topic that's been growing over the years. This new social media thing with the National Labor Relations Board is a trend that has just exploded in the last year, year and a half.
And it's because it's particularly fraught with confrontation and people don't know. I mean, it hasn't, it's still, you're walking on ice at the same time.
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot like 1964 when I was a junior in high school, and that's when the Civil Rights Act of 64 was passed.
Okay.
And everybody kind of grew up with it over the years, and I with 40 years experience. But now with this new NLRB position, that's like Title VII was in 1964, and it is going to grow and it's going to change. But a policy for employers is key to stand out of the murky waters of this issue for now. Another trend I've seen that is not a positive trend is that women still are only making 77 cents on every dollar.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that trend actually hasn't changed much over the last few years, many years. Other trends are the issue of whether or not you can quit your job and be constructively discharged by the conditions that the employer is posing on you.
Such as non-competes and intellectual property protection, some of those conditions you might mention to our listeners.
That's a huge area now, the non-competes and whether or not those are legal or the restraint of trade.
And for our listeners, meaning that you cannot turn around and go be employed in even a company that sort of kind of looks like where you previously were, even in the same market space.
Exactly right. And interestingly enough, broadcasters are exempt under Arizona law from that particular non-compete provision. However, tomorrow I'll be meeting with a client that has a non-compete in the HR consulting field. And so that's a big trend now for everybody to put non-competes in their employment agreements. And so that's big.
And then you go from state to state and you deal with the generations of people that now are moving every 5 years, and it gets a little bit, again, it's almost like ministers in this day and age said they'd be coaching all of their prospective marital clients, so to speak, or parishioners to get a prenuptial in place. It's just it's an antithetical thought, although it might be the safest thing you got to do.
Well, in Arizona, it might be. I don't do marital law at all, but I know that it's a community property state.
That's right.
What's mine is yours, and what's yours is yours. So, on a kind of a humorous note there, but still. I think that right now in the employment context, which I've grown up with as well, is that employers are still the bosses, and people need to understand that they are running the store. They are the boss. On the other hand, they also need to understand and meld into their own rights the fact that employees have rights. And when those two things cross, it's going to cost them some money, so they really need to have their policies in place. And if I never say anything else in the employment context, that is, document your files. If you don't document your files, you're going to lose your case. That's just the way, and it's got to be honest documentation and timely documentation. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would think another area that's changed significantly in your area of employment law is this whole definition of what's the organization. Since so many companies now outsource, have contract employees, have part-timers that don't necessarily get company benefits. I mean, you remember the famous Microsoft case where if someone has been a contract employee more than 2 years, suddenly got backdated because they really, in the view of the organization, had been doing a la what a full-time organization done. Well, now you see more and more companies with virtual workforces in some way, making this even a different perspective to look at.
Exactly. And the other thing that employers are doing to avoid paying FICA and benefits is making all these employees independent contractors.
Right.
And that's a real slippery slope that we can't spend the next 20 minutes on, much, you know, even an hour on that issue.
It is. But on the other hand, for some of our listeners I know who are relishing in the thought of having an independent life, whether that be working from their home part time or flex hours or being in a contract space so they're a lot more mobile, these are all factors to recognize you can take to your fullest positive advantage, not just view them as a negative context.
No, I think if you're the employee or you're the contractor, mm-hmm. the one that's doing the work, and you want to be independent and you don't want to have that 9-to-5, sure, I think independence is great, but where it's being utilizes by employers to avoid paying benefits and taxes.
Exactly. And there's a whole other set of ramifications of how do I go find benefits then as an independent contractor that isn't as readily available under company plans?
It will be soon.
Yeah, indeed. You see that as a move across the country then?
Well, I do. I think the Affordability Health Care Act is going to help people to afford to get health care, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, a whole other topic as well. Well, I mentioned in the introduction, Tom, of course, that you teach and that you've written this book, The Executive Guide to Employment Practices, and at one point you had been a VP of HR for 4 years, so you were, what do you say, on the other side of the desk?
I was definitely I've been on all sides of the desk.
Awesome.
And I represent employers, and every once in a while I represent an employee, but being in the HR department and heading up an HR department for 1,200 employees, it's quite the challenge.
And you saw everything you could imagine and then some, didn't you?
Yes, and in fact, I'm working on the fourth edition of my book, and I'm thinking of changing the name to How Not to Be a Stupid Manager.
Hey, you, and you know what? That would probably be a book that a lot of people would buy for their bosses, in fact.
They very well might.
Well, I'll tell you, the whole practice balance, of course, the Udall Law Firm, we can spend a few moments here, of course, one of the largest in southern Arizona, as I mentioned, as well as here in Tucson, 1952. Your staff, the makeup of the team, the nature of your different practices, changing a lot then in this day and age with the new things on the horizon?
Well, I'm exceptionally proud to be part of the Udall firm, frankly, and we have lawyers that specialize or emphasize in their practice trusts and wills and estates. Mm-hmm. We have real estate specialists that worry about real estate law. We have corporate people that form LLCs and partnerships. We have a whole litigation side that will handle corporate litigation if a company gets sued or somebody wants to sue a company. Of course, subject conflict checks. We also have an insurance defense side. So we're such a broad-based firm that the beautiful thing about it is that the expertise that we have cuts across all lines except for we've now just started in some criminal and domestic relations actions. So now we're pretty much a full-service law firm.
Isn't that something? By the way, for those who may have tuned in, we're speaking with Tom Cope. He's a partner at Udall Law. You can learn more about the firm at www.udallaw.com. Tom, this idea that there's so many circles that seem to be coming back and being completed for you personally, your teaching career, you're having been a student, and probably even now you still are a student with all these changes in the law that continues, correct?
Absolutely. Being a lawyer was described to me once as being in a profession where you do your homework the rest of your life.
The rest of your life. And so any of you thinking
like
about
I'm
that?
Yeah. Homework the rest of my life.
Well, I think there's another piece I mentioned just briefly, and this could be a whole other show, is the fact that you're also trained and experienced in mediation. And usually you don't see that combination in the same person.
Well, I'm a very experienced litigator. I've had lots of jury trials, and I find it very important to try to resolve legal disputes outside the courtroom. Because once you're in the courtroom, the choice of settling or not or the result is out of your control.
Exactly.
So I feel mediation is definitely a positive.
And do you see that coming into the upbringing of our lawyers then, both in the law schools, bringing that more as an option?
Absolutely. In fact, in Arizona, in Pima County, if your dispute in court is under $50,000, you're mandated to go to mediation.
Mediation first. What a great. You're right. The idea is resolving things quickly and positively with the right balance, isn't
it? And cheaper for the litigants.
And cheaper, yes, really. Well, thank you very much. What an informative session. I have a hunch if we have you on a year from now, it'll be some other subtle nuance or big kapowie, like you say, just like your experience early in the 60s, 70s, and 80s on other major sweeps within the law.
It could be, and I do appreciate having the opportunity to visit with you.
It's a real pleasure. Again, you can learn more about Tom's practice, Tom Cope, at udalllaw.com. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Real pleasure. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.